Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Turning Towards Life. This is Lizzie and Justin. It is a Sunday morning in May, and we are coming to you live from somewhere in London, different places in London, should I say, and the sun is shining. There isn't a cloud in the sky. And yesterday, we had a little third space picnic. So in Richmond Park in Southwest London, we gathered. And so for those of you who were there yesterday, thank you so much for coming. And for those of you who would like to know about when those things are happening, you can go to our website, which is turningtowards.life. And you can also go to wearethirdspace.org and join our mailing list, and we can tell you about these things. But it was quite something. I don't think we've gathered like that, Justin, since the whole world kerfuffle of COVID began. And so it was really beautiful just to be together and sit on some logs and eat some picnic things. And so I'm feeling very filled up with our community and the kind of world that we're contributing to and helping to make by the relationships and that we hold and the kind of things like this that we're doing. And I'm really grateful, and also grateful, Justin, for your never-ending capacity to find sources. Like when I read this source for today about play and games, I feel myself going, my goodness, there's so much. There really is so much. I'm just feeling grateful for that this morning as well. So the sun is shining, and we're going to be talking about pouring time into play. And thank you for choosing this source, Justin.
You're so welcome, Lizzie. Lizzie, before I say anything else, I just wonder which microphone you're coming through, because it's
coming through the one that I should be coming through, but excellent, it's not near enough. Is that
I think
better?
It's not. That's so much better.
Okay, there it is.
Thank you. Well, good morning, everyone, as well. I'm so pleased, Lizzie, to be doing this again. As always, the faithfulness of this practice. And so I also want to say thank you and an invitation to everyone who's with us, whether you've been being faithful with this practice over many years in joining us, or whether you're new, or whether you come and go and just dip in once in a while. If you happen to have landed with us in this conversation, you're so welcome to be here with us. And this source, Lizzie, is from a book that I love, that is written with such generosity, but also such precision. Not a word in this book is wasted. And it's like this all the way through, that some tiny piece sort of opens into a giant world of possibility. So it's from Finite and Infinite Games by James Cass. I'll read it. There are two kinds of games. One could be called finite, the other infinite. A finite game is played for the purpose of winning. An infinite game is played for the purpose of continuing the play. For an infinite player, there's no such thing as an hour of time. There can be an hour of love, or a day of grieving, or a season of learning, or a period of labor. An infinite player does not begin working for the purpose of filling up a period of time with work, but for the purpose of filling work with time. Work is not a way of passing time, but engendering possibility. Work is not a way of arriving at a desired present and securing it against an unpredictable future, but of moving towards a future that itself has a future. So infinite players cannot say how much they have completed in their work or love or quarreling, but only that much remains incomplete in it. They're not concerned to determine when it's over, but only what comes from it. A finite player puts play into time. An infinite player puts time into play.
There are two kinds of games. One could be called finite, the other infinite. A finite game is played for the purpose of winning, an infinite game for the purpose of continuing the play. For an infinite player, there is no such thing as an hour of time. There can be an hour of love, or a day of grieving, or a season of learning, or a period of labor. An infinite player does not begin working for the purpose of filling up a period of time with work, but for the purpose of filling work with time. Work is not a way of passing time, but engendering possibility. Work is not a way of arriving at a desired present and securing it against an unpredictable future, but of moving towards a future that itself has a future. So infinite players cannot say how much they have completed in their work or love or quarrelling, but only that much remains incomplete in it. They are not concerned to determine when it's over, but only what comes from it. A finite player puts play into time. An infinite player puts time into play.
I'm laughing because it's first of all, for anyone who's with us, you can always find the source in the show notes to the podcast and on the turningtowards.life website and in our Facebook group and all of those places. Lizzie, this is one of these pieces of writing that I think is deliberately made to try and turn us inside out by using words in ways that are surprising and look like they make an obvious kind of sense. And then you look again, it's like, something really strange is going on here. So the thing that's most present for me immediately is a couple of things in this very rich text. So one is this first distinction between finite games and infinite games. And I know from having read the book that it's not just about board games or playing a game of cricket or something like that, that this is, it's a question about how we live our lives. And that one way that is so easy to live life, and gosh, do I feel myself pulled into this, is that I have to win something. And winning something means I have to get something done. I have to stay safe. I have to get known. I have to have a certain amount of money in my bank account. I have to have the relationship I want or whatever. When I've got it, I'll have won, which is the finite game. And then there's the infinite game, which is the only thing that's important is living into life in a way that makes more life possible. So every move I make in the game of living, of being in this conversation with you, of isn't to produce some finished something and then we can go, yes, we won it, we smashed it. We can go, what next? What does what we just did make possible? So that I think is the difference between a finite game and an infinite game. And then we can live life. Sometimes we have to live it in finite games. There are things that we have to finish, but the bigger question for me is how do we live into an infinite game that will go on began long before us and will go on long after us? So there's like 3 billion other things to say about this, which I'm not going to say now. But right in the middle of this, work is not a way of arriving at a desired present and securing it against an unpredictable future, but of moving towards a future that itself has a future. So I'm talking with our middle son about what he might do with the coming years. And I notice that what we get taught, he's just at the stage of choosing university or whatever else. You know, Lee or Lizzie, and we're in this conversation. And what I notice is that the world teaches us to think about work, the things that we pour ourselves into our lives, as a way of playing a finite game. If you do this work, you'll get this, or you'll save yourself from this. And when you've got this, or you've saved yourself from this, everything will be okay. You'll have arrived at a desired moment in the future, and then you'll have secured yourself against unpredictability. And sometimes we need to do that, but as a way of thinking about our lives, as a way of wondering what we're for, there's something so much deeper and so much more powerful in being the ones who move towards a future that, whenever we get to it, is going to have its own future. So whatever we unfold into, we're never done. It's always going to be unfolding into something else. And can we live with that? There's so much more life and depth in seeing that that's what's going on in the world, that we're not playing a game, that we're here to get the points in and then declare victory.
Mm.
So anyway, all of that is here for me as we, you know, as we begin this, and lots more.
Oh my gosh, I feel so undone. So many times when we sit here, I think, oh my goodness, I can't even talk. I don't even know how to say the thing that's happening. Oh my God. I just feel very undone. And like, for somehow this is, all of this is an explanation for some kind of ongoing profound unease that I've experienced in my life. So, you know, when you get somewhere and it's never the thing that everyone told you it was going to be, I think it's that. Like, you know, like you were saying that each future has a future. There's something about continuity or flow and never-endingness that didn't get kind of, it didn't get told about. And so I've always gone along with an expectation of completion or something. And it never happens. And so there's always a kind of, because of that setup, there's always a kind of grief or a disappointment or a, oh. And I feel kind of re-educated somehow by this passage of writing, like re-pointed into futures have futures. And that's true. And it feels really true to me in the reading, in my experience of life. And so then, I don't know, somehow I feel something's been explained about life that makes sense, that we're on a continuum. And somehow I think there's kind of the winning thing, like you were saying, and the getting somewhere, and then you're there, and then you've inoculated yourself against unpredictability. It feels so kind of imbued in everything that is in the soup of our culture and the way that we are with one another. Even like raising children, like one day your children will be adults and that will be the completion thing. But I know from people with much older children than me that that's not true either. And my gosh, the other thing that somehow is making a link, Justin, in the same realm, is that the word here that's right next to work is play. So we're playing a game, and somehow included in that is work. And I feel like I'm thrown into this question of maybe living in this kind of infinite way is only possible if we know how to play. Like, there's something about playing that invites, or playfulness maybe I could say, that invites the possibility of the infinite being real. Like, if I don't take myself too seriously, then this flow feels possible. But when I start getting all kind of tense and controlling, and this has to happen, my playfulness is just kind of out the window. And so I'm feeling really invited into inviting a kind of playfulness, even into the serious places, even into those ones where something's at stake. What if that playfulness is just a super central, supportive way of living that lets this infinite flow of futures having futures be something I can relax into, rather than having milestones or something, or this is, you know, we've done that now. I feel so invited into a playfulness and a flow of infinite nextness.
Just so lovely. There's as you were talking about futures having futures, I had this, I wish I could throw up on the screen or have to describe something, an image that came to me, which is that I think that the way that many of us experience time, or at least think about time, is as a line. when we conceive of time as a line, and I'm here on the line, and some point in the future I'll be there on the line, and I've got like, there's a little dot at here where I am, and there's a little dot where I'm getting to.
Yeah.
And when I've got to there, I'll have completed the thing, and I'll have won the thing, and I'll have, that's by then I have to make whatever it is I've had to make happen, I will have had to make happen. And I'll be the same person when I get there. So I plan this line as if the me that's going to be there is the same as the me that's here, and the world that's going to be there is the same as the world that's there. So that's how we think about time. And then you said futures in futures. I suddenly imagined rosebuds growing inside rosebuds.
Mm.
So there's an unfolding into the future, and then what's happening is in that other rosebuds are popping up and growing, and time then isn't this linear thing that goes from one place to another place. It's an endless unfolding, a sort of a popping open of possibilities, some of which we are making by the moves we make, and some of which are happening because there are other people around, and the world is the world, and it's unpredictable. When I could feel that, I could feel how, which seems really true, I could feel how off, you know, for some things, for building a house or something, having time that goes on the line is quite good. It's a certain number of bricks and certainly, you know, it's going to go in this order and all of that. But for life, it's actually it's a really terrible metaphor for thinking about the way things happen. That was kind of a relief, because every moment that I act on something, or we have a conversation, or something happens, we are new rosebuds are budding in the buds, in the flowers that have already opened. And we can't know yet which ones of those are going to grow in what shape and where the ones inside are going to grow. We can't know. All we can do is make the next move with good heart and good intention. And I think I agree with you, and with a sufficient amount of playfulness.
Mm.
Because anyway, when we get to the date, which we imagined was the end of the line, I'm going to be a different person anyway. And boy, the world is going to be different. Oh my goodness, how the world is different now from 20 years ago, from 20 years before that, from 20 years before that. The world, anyone who was planning anything 20 years ago for the world today, would certain that they would just move along the line. I think any of us who've done that find out that this wasn't anything like how we'd imagined. So I really think that's what I'm really with you about. Playfulness, and I could feel playfulness emerging in me as you said it, the possibility that we might take the greatest care that we can take, because the point about an infinite game is that the move you make is the one that makes it possible to continue.
Mm.
Whereas in a finite game, which is the one where you go along the line, you get to the end, and the purpose is to win it. So it ends when I've got there, it's done. But actually life is never like that. Wherever we are, it's life is unfolding. So, and it feels very liberating to me that somewhere else in this book, Lizzie, James Cass says that one of the other differences between a finite game and an infinite game is that when you're playing a finite game and you're trying to win, it's always dependent upon other people. There being spectators who know that you've won. That's how we know we've won, is other people agree with us. Yeah, you've made it, Lizzie. Wow. You know, look at you. But in an infinite game, that's not an issue. You're not comparing what you're doing with what anybody else makes of it. You don't need other people to give you the status of having won, because there's no winning. There's taking the next move.
Yeah.
And that kind of play is so different from the kind of play when we're trying to be the one who beats someone else, or be the one who beats the system, or be the one who beats life, or be the one who... that line still just reaches me like so powerfully every time. Be the one who gets to a certain present, which is secured against the unpredictable future. I realize I really don't want to live like that. But the frightened parts of me try very hard. When I get frightened, there are parts of me that go, right, we have to get to the present that isn't like this one, and we have to secure it against the unpredictable future.
Mm.
And it's so... tight, and just right now I can feel myself wanting to go, yeah, let's like we're doing in this conversation, what's the next move? I wonder what play Lizzie will play next. Mm. And whatever you say, something will be in a whole new sort of configuration that we weren't in before, and then something else will unfold from it. That's this
also, Justin, it seems to me that turning towards life is an infinite game. Like, we haven't created a something that's a boundaried, time boundaried offering or something. We haven't said, this is what this is. And it starts here. And it's time bounded in the time we do it today, like half an hour, but it's a regular ongoing, it doesn't have an end point. So you could string all the conversations together and you just see the flow of it over the years, kind of thing. And also, I'm feeling the kind of undoingness of talking about time like this as well. Like, almost like time is like a metric overlaid onto life. That if you took it too seriously, you could think that was a massive factor. Like, there's a way I feel like I could focus on time as if it's a measurement of something, when it's there for arbitrary reasons, maybe, really, rather than profound reasons. So it's there because you and I know to turn up at 9 o'clock on a Sunday. And that's helpful and useful. But I think I could also use time for the really wrong things, like age, for example. Oh, I'm this age and therefore I can't do this and I can't do that. Like, I can feel like it could be used as a very powerful determinant of what's possible and what's not possible if I mistook its power. And in this moment, I'm kind of seeing it as quite a veneer of like a useful tool, but not a profound indicator of where I am or what's been achieved or what's going to happen next or something. And I feel like that the funny thing is, across my life, there have been conversations about time that always kind of throw me, because I think I've, like most people probably, been very indoctrinated with time, as if you have to make the most of something. Monday to Sunday has a certain pattern to it. Saturday and Sunday have a certain pattern to it. Like, there's a way that time gets in the way of everything if I let it. And then when I can see it as something that's more of a veneer, more of a kind of something that can be useful if I choose to use it, then so much more becomes possible underneath the veneer, like swathes of possibility that I don't have to try and fit into time. You know, this, the lines at the end, you can either put play into time or time into play. Like, I think it's shifting the power around play and time in those two sentences. And I'm experiencing time becoming less powerful and life becoming more powerful than time. It's so hard to say it, but that's how I'm feeling.
So I'm really with you, and I'm so glad you're bringing this up. The line, the more powerful phrasing of it in this text for me is in the middle, where he says, what about, instead of working for the purpose of filling up a period of time with work, I'm going to do an hour's work, I'm going to do 3 hours work, I'm going to do a working week's work of work. What happens when we fill work with time? Which doesn't even make sense to us because of the way that we've come to think about time. So what is it? Is that we imbue what we get up to, let time fill it and flow through it, open it, rather than I've got a bucket of time or a line of time and I have to fit things into it. It's a completely other way around of thinking. And I think that this way of, that you were talking about time, Lizzie, clock time, the clock time really helps us. You know, we know we're going to do this for half an hour, and we know we're going to meet at 9. All those things makes it possible. But like you say, I'm feeling more and more strongly as you were talking, how that definition of time, time as clock time, time as line time, time as quantity time, is the shallowest way of encountering time. But it's the one that we've learned is what time is. So you look at, if you know, on an analog clock or on a, you know, you watch the hand go round and you know how much time you've got left. That's what time is. It's a dwindling quantity of something. and I have to get somewhere by the, you know, the midday mark. I have to, or the, you know, 2025 mark, or the, by the time I'm 50 mark, or the, you know. So if time isn't that, if time is something that can fill things, that pours into things, or that unfolds into things. The other way of looking at time is that all time is it's that something that makes possibilities possible. If there wasn't any time, everything would be stuck. Because we've got time, I can say something new and so can you, and I can change and so can you, and flowers can bud that they couldn't do because we have time. And I've been really thinking about this because it was my birthday last week. And I turned 52, and 52 is only a number. But when I think about linear time, I get into counting how much time I've had and how much time I might have left and what I should have done and what I still have to do. And it's terrifying and constraining, and it's not liberating or really that helpful, because the actual experience of living each day of time is when we're in living a day of time, if we let ourselves pour time into our work or put time on the inside of play, I think that's what that last line means, then it's never really about how much time has been, nor about how much time will be, because they doesn't make sense in there to count time. What there is there's what I'm up to, and letting time fill it so that whatever's happening here can happen. And this whole like putting myself on a line between birth and death or doesn't make sense in the same way. But there was this thing we did, you and I were talking about whether we'd done something from Finite and Infinite Games before and Turning Towards Life, and we haven't, but we did do something on another book about time a few months ago on Oliver Berkman's book, 4,000 Weeks. So he says, we are time, which is the same thing that's going on here, which is just turning inside out so that we stop counting and start imagining what might be in response to whatever is right with us.
God, now I don't even know what the word time means. Like, it's just a sound. What is that? Oh gosh, it feels very, very excellently undoing. And I'm just remembering, Justin, I did lots of shenanigans early in my, you know, in my kind of early 20s, I suddenly didn't know what on earth I was here for or what I was doing. I had like a kind of quarter life crisis, I think they probably call it. So I went off and did lots of different things and meditation and went and stayed in an ashram and did yoga and listened to lots of things and did lots of things. And I remember one of the things that really kind of blew things apart for me is that I did a 7-day silent retreat where they removed all the mirrors and all the clocks. And it was kind of bounded in a particular way that there was only a particular space that we would be in, which had lots in it. But everything was rhythmed, but it wasn't a time, there wasn't a timetable. It was, there were things happened at certain points, but there wasn't any time. And I remember I didn't notice those two things until, you know, we were talking about in one of the Turning Towards Life a couple of weeks ago, maybe, where you retroactively observe something and see what was going on. And I didn't notice that there were no mirrors, and I didn't notice that there were no clocks until, I mean, in this moment, I'm noticing there was no clocks. And this was like nearly 20 years ago I did this. And I feel really, I don't know, really held by the fact that that experience happened. And it was time bound, because I think it was for 7 days. But it wasn't punctuated inside that 7 days in the same way as life is normally punctuated. So it kind of had a flow to it, and there were things that happened, and it was a process basically, but it didn't have the same structure inside of it that said, right, at 9 o'clock we gather. Like it didn't do that thing of leaving me being an adult responsible for turning up on time. Things just happened. Like it was just a rhythmic kind of, it was obvious what to do because of the way it was set up. And I feel like in my retroactive observation now, I think it set up a kind of questioning about time. So then all through the kind of ripple effects of that and God knows what, various times I've literally been stopped dead in my tracks going, I don't know what time is. And if it isn't what I think it is, what the hell is going on? You know, like when a structure kind of gets smashed apart, and then I don't even know like how to walk anymore or something. Like it's, I just feel like this time construct has such power to either hold us in the narratives we're in and or really quite profoundly undo them. And I feel really, I don't know, like that like for us to encounter life without time being the way that we measure and mark and be responsible to, a very different world opens up, but it feels almost impossible to talk about it.
Somewhere I read that before clock time was invented, we'd still have to coordinate things with one another. So if you wanted to meet someone, you'd say, I'll meet you when our shadows are the same height as our bodies. Yeah. You need a sunny day for, but it would be true, you know, in a certain place, it would be true, yeah, that a certain time, sometimes your shadow is shorter and sometimes it's longer, but when it, so you'd use things like that. It wouldn't be 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock or something. And you'd wake when it was light and you'd work to do the things that were called for and stop when they were done. And the seasons would shape us in different ways than they do now. And it's not that clock time is an unhelpful thing. It really makes so much possible.
Mm.
But it's also deeply tied up with narratives of efficiency and productivity. How much can be produced in a certain amount of time? Time is money, time is productivity, time is what makes the school day start at the right time, or workers be in the right place at the right time, or, and just in what you were saying about the unexpressibility of this, that there is this other dimension of time that's been eclipsed for, or probably for almost all of us all of the time, which is the one which isn't any of those kinds of time. It's the time of taking a step towards a future that itself has a future,
mm-hmm,
that's unknown. And it's the, and this is where I, for me, to last thing for me to say is, so then it allows us into this, the beautiful side of this, letting ourselves inhabit an hour of love or a day, mm-hmm, of grieving or a season of learning, letting us have the possibility that we fill what we care about with time, play with time, work with time, rather than counting all the time and trying to fit everything into time. That's, which is the thing we do always if we've been fully sort of indoctrinated into the way of, we keep on having to have time be the container into which we put everything. Rather than love be the container, or grief be the container, or play be the container for, or learning be the container for, or labor be the container for. That's so,
yeah,
discombobulating and life-giving to feel. And I feel like I'm going to walk out of this conversation like I've opening my eyes and my heart, I think mostly, to a way of being in whatever, you know, whatever we go into next today and over the coming days, to come into it with that open-heartedness of letting the thing be the container for time.
Oh, this is so lovely. I agree. I'm going to be walking into the sunshine and going to the swings probably and feeling the something beneath the veneer of the time that I've been in relationship with a lot in my life. I'm feeling the never-endingness.
Thank you so much, Lizzie. Thank you, everyone, for being with us for this unfolding infinite game. And Lizzie, you too, where we never know where the next move will take us, and it has no end point. It has no destination. It simply has opening into whatever we're opening to for the sake of it. So I'm so grateful that we get to do this, and so grateful that so many of you who are listening and watching are with us. And please feel very welcome to share this with others who you think will benefit. And we will be back, all being well, at an agreed time.
Yes.
9 o'clock in the morning UK time next Sunday.
Thanks, Justin. Bye, everyone.
Bye.